Go with the flow.
Blog Talk Radio.
Another great show brought to you through the Law of Attraction Radio Network.
Today is the beginning of the rest of your life. And today you can tap into the source in which to live a wonderful new lifestyle of wealth and abundance that affects all areas of your life. Join Dr. Anne as she enriches us with her holistic wisdom on the Joy of Wealthy Living radio program. And here's Dr. Anne.
Hello there, my wonderful ones, my joyful ones. It is a lovely day where I am, and I know it is just lovely where you are too. And welcome to the Joy of Wealthy Living radio program on the Law of Attraction Radio Network, where we ignite the flames of change in your consciousness to live a true wealthy life, which includes your career, relationships, recreation, and definitely having fun with that, your health and wellness, abundance and finances, and least not forget spirituality. I hope that you are doing well, and of course, you know who you're listening to. I am Dr. Anne, your Joy of Wealthy Living host. Today, I found a magnificent quote by a man who may not have considered himself a philosopher or someone that people may not have even, he wouldn't think that people would quote him. But after he did one fish, two fish, three fish, blowfish, all of those different fishes, or the Cat in the Hat, you know who I'm talking about, our beloved Dr. Seuss. He is one of our modern philosophers. And he wrote quotes from Oh, the Thinks You Can Think. Think left, think right. Think low, think high. Oh, the thinks you can think up if only you try. Imagine the thinks that you can think, or the thoughts that you can think, if you only could try. Or if you will only allow, or if you only will let it happen. The other philosopher, the good philosopher Yoda, said that there is no try, just do. So just do it. Just think. Think about what you can do. This is all about perhaps using your imagination. How do you use your imagination for the good of all? And the good of all means everyone and everything that may cross your path or may not cross your path and have a ripple effect because you have done something for somebody and they carry it on to someone else. Think about it. Reverse those negative thoughts that have told you in the past that you were not creative or that you could not think of something new to do or to have, or you just do not have imagination. How many times have you ever thought that you did not have imagination? I'm quite sure that there were times when you thought that you could not create anything. I am not a creative person. I have no imagination. Everybody has an imagination. Everybody can be creative if you allow that to surface into your life. Your imagination is where the divine funnels its magnificent ideas through you to bring into manifestation. Therefore, why deny yourself this opportunity to birth something great into the world? Stop right now and change those thoughts. Change it and believe that you do have an imagination and that your imagination can be for the good of all. Oh, so now everybody on that, Just take a deep breath and breathe in and just release those negative thoughts of not having an imagination, because you do have an imagination. Breathe in and release and just settle comfortably wherever you are. Wherever you are on this planet called Earth, you are perfect. You are a magnificent creature of the universe, wherever you are. And you are an essence of good right there. Remember that God is all there is, that God is omnipresent, omnipotent. He is, or she is, one with us, with this power that is great, and we create all that is and whatever it is. I, Anne Williamson, speak my word for you and myself, knowing that with every thought I have or had is for my highest and greatest good. And I know that each thought will manifest in something that is great. I let go of anything that no longer supports my imagination, that creates new and wonderful things that are about to pop into this realm of wonderness, of this realm of the world, where you, I, this person there, that person there resides. And it's all for the good. It is all because it comes from the divine power's guidance and direction when we are given these ideas that stem from this imagination and is the basis of our creativity. I affirm that good and more good will come from these thoughts and these ideas that we have. I accept these thoughts and ideas because they're nothing but good. They're positive. They radiate nothing but light. And I accept this. Thankfully, I let go of these words into the infinite mind, knowing that right now and right here that these words are being manifested. I let go and I let them grow full into their awesomeness wherever they land. And so it is, and so it is. Take another deep breath and just breathe in the awesomeness of this. Breathe in the wonderfulness. Breathe in. And then just release everything that no longer is for your highest and best good. Breathe in and breathe out. And one more time, take a deep breath, breathe in and breathe out. Oh, it's wonderful. It's just wonderful to be here with you. I have something for you to smile about. We're coming up on a holiday here in the United States, and some people decide that they may want to do a little barbecuing in the backyard, or they may want to take the family out on an outing, or maybe they want to be alone and take a hike through the woods. So just in case you decide you want to take a hike in the woods, and hopefully you don't get lost, but however, if you do get lost, let me tell you what happened to this man that I know, that I heard of, rather, and he got lost in the woods. For 2 days, he just roamed around trying to get out of the woods, but he couldn't find his way out. And he had not eaten in this long period of time for 2 days, and he was so hungry. Oh, yes, I can understand that. For 2 long days without any food. So over on a rock, he spotted a bald eagle. You know, one of our nation's, United States nation's bird, the bird of our country. He was hungry. He didn't care. It was protected or what. He killed it. And he started to eat it. And as soon as he started to eat, guess what? Of all the times, here comes the park rangers. And he saw what he was doing. And, you know, instead of helping the man out, they arrested him for killing an endangered species. Oh, how horrible. So at court, he pleaded innocent to the charges against him, claiming that he had eaten the bald eagle. He would have died from starvation. Don't you think so? Yeah. The judge ruled in his favor. In the judge's closing statement, he asked the man, "I would like you to tell me something before I let you go. I have never eaten a bald eagle or ever planned to. But tell me, how did it taste? And what did it taste like?" The man answered, "Well, tasted pretty good. It tasted like a cross between a whooping crane and a spotted owl. Oh, okay, so another thing that you don't tell the judge, that you killed two other maybe endangered creatures in the endangered list. I wondered, was the judge sympathetic to him then? Very interesting. Upcoming events, I always announce that my book that I was a co-author of, Mastering the Art of Success, is out, and you can buy a copy straight from me for $25. And remember that the other co-authors are Jack Canfield, Mark Victor Hansen, and Les Brown. And with your $25, you get an hour of introductory coaching from Dr. Ann Mwa. You get a free Buff It Up program assessment. Buff equals perfection plus personal style. And it is a self-personal development program for you. And it also means that when you buff up your lifestyle, that you're really living a wealthy life. And this is what this whole program is about. Having the joy to live a life that is wealthy in all of your areas of your life. Our special guest today is James Mates, and we will get back with him in about 30 seconds. So hold tight and come back and listen. Go get that drink of water if you need to, and we'll be right here.
You are listening to your daily dose of well-being and inspiration on Law of Attraction Radio Network at LOARadionetwork.com. Hear this incredible show on your smartphone through Stitcher.com, which goes through your car stereos with Ford Sync or any auto dashboard that has the internet. Listen to our 24/7 broadcast with our mobile app as well, or just listen through an MP3 player or computer. Remember, LOARadionetwork.com, heard in over 120 countries, is the radio station for your well-being.
James, are you there?
I am here and chomping at the bit.
Oh, wee. He is chomping at the bit. Oh, my gosh. Well, let me tell you a little bit that I mean, when he sent me his bio, it was like pages on top of pages on top of pages. We do not have enough time on our radio program to go through all of his wonderful accomplishments, but I'm just going to touch upon a bit of who James Mates is. And did I pronounce that right?
You did.
mates. Okay, so he is the founder of Quantum Leap Thinking. Okay, so we know right now he's a heavy thinker. Okay, we can't get past him on anything today. And he is the creator of the Transformational Coach. He is an expert on the psychology of applied imagination. He is a bestseller author, highly acclaimed business speaker, consultant, seminar leader, and personal excellence coach as well. For over 30 years, James has been an ardent student of human behavior and dedicated to helping individuals, teams, organizations identify and break through barriers to which they are to reach their goals and achieve success. He encourages people to be open to new ways of thinking, and his goal is to help everyone make the quantum leap toward more creative, positive, and competent lives. For both businesses and individuals, his message promotes an innovative, powerful way of thinking and provides a newfound mastery over their imagination, perceptions, so that, in his words, the invisible becomes visible and the impossible becomes impossible. Oh, James, how are you today?
I am terrific. Thank you. Absolutely
so,
terrific.
Good. You sound terrific. So, now, okay, so this chomping at the bit, how does it taste?
It tastes great. Well, I listened to your introduction, and I made about 8 notes. One of the things that I thought about was Einstein's quote, which I just, the great physicist, which is, imagination is more important than knowledge. And the last part of that, it is a preview of life's coming attractions.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. So, therefore, you have worked with people. You know, earlier I said, you know, people have been feeding themselves these erroneous thoughts that they do not have an imagination. So what do you tell people when they come to you and they find out that you are this person that is the expert in applied imagination? And they say, okay, yeah, sure. What are you talking about? What?
Well, I guess the first thing I'd say is, you couldn't have made it here to see me if you didn't have an imagination to get here. but I am, you know, imagination is like the wind. I mean, it's like air. It's we, all of us have imagination. We may not have the absolute skill to play a piano concerto, but no one alive on this earth, including people that are mentally challenged, don't have an imagination. So the whole point is how do you direct it? How do you apply it? And when you were talking about changing thoughts, you know, sometimes, and letting go, those are two big things. And one of the things I wrote down here, the little phrases that said, we never, ever have to put any effort in to having fear-based thoughts of the future. But we do have to learn the skills and put in a little effort to be able to let go and change our thinking. And you know, one of the other, there's two, I'll just tell you two quick demonstrations I do in my talks, and I think they're, even though we're doing this and your listeners will get it, when I get up in front of a crowd, I take a lemon, and I say, I'm going to start by talking about focus your imagination. So I hold a lemon in my hand, and I say, at the count of three, I'm going to take a bite out of this lemon, and I want you to pretend biting this lemon with me. Now, in order to do that, in order to imagine that that's what you're doing, you have to go back in your past and you have to remember what makes up a lemon. It's yellow and it has a texture and it has a certain scent to it. And then I cut it in half and I dribble it down and I say, now pretend, as a child would pretend, that you're biting this lemon. So I go 1, 2, 3 and I take a big bite out of it. You can see people cringe, and then I ask a simple question.
Yes.
How many of you had some kind of a reaction to that? And it is always, I have had audiences as large as 10,000, as small as 10, and the same, it's 90 to 95%. And then I say, it's like a miracle, because what you just did is create a biochemical change in your body with your mind, a neurological change out of nothing, out of pure imagination. And the same thing happens if we think about a future that something will happen that is fearful, or we think about something loving and joyful, or we go to the past and we're holding on to grievances and we don't forgive, or we go to the past and we recollect or we remember the things that charged us, to nurtured us. And so then we can learn how to create our thoughts on the future. And the second thing that I do is I have everybody that is wearing red or maroon in a room stand up. So, you know, men and women stand up and they have something, a tie, a skirt, whatever it is. And I have the whole group look at them. And then I have them sit down and I have everyone close their eyes and I ask a question. How many of you can remember the general direction and the article of clothing everyone wearing red or maroon? Raise your hand. Mm-hmm. So their hands go up. Mm-hmm. I say, open your eyes, look around. Everybody sees that everybody's hands up. I say, now close your eyes again and raise your hand if you can remember the general location and the article of clothing of everyone wearing blue. Now open your eyes. And it's a simple demonstration, but the power is we see, we recognize what we think about most, what's in our mindset, our affirmations, our positiveness, or, God help us, our negative stuff too. So you notice that which you spend the most time thinking about. So that's what I was thinking about as you were talking at the beginning.
Absolutely. And you know what this all heads to, what we believe and conceive, what we conceive, we believe, we can also achieve. I think, who is that famous man? Oh, my gosh.
Og Mandino or Zig Ziglar or W. Clement Stone was one of the...
I think it was Stone, W. Clement Stone.
He was like
who
the
said
father
that.
Of positive.
Yes, he put that out. And if I'm wrong, I am so sorry, but it was someone back in those days.
Well, it could have been one of, I've got so many of these books.
Or Napoleon Hill.
I think it was Napoleon Hill. Think and Grow Rich. He was, as I look, I've got about 1,000 books here. And, of course, this is like seeing the color red. I glanced over to one of my bookshelves, and I see Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill.
There you go.
Which most people don't – they haven't read it because they look at rich and they only think money. But they don't consider, as you said at the beginning, mental, physical, spiritual, emotional. Richness is the way we have the possibility to live.
Oh, my gosh. You have hit it right on the nail. It is not about how much you have in your pocket or in your bank account, even though that is wonderful, but it is all the wonderful riches that you find in every area of your life. And I see that you are definitely a wealthy man.
That I am. And the other thing that I was thinking about at the beginning, quantum leap thinking took me 14 years to write because I have dyslexia, I have ADD, and I wouldn't let anyone write it with me. So it took that long. And my second book, which I literally finished the last draft of last week, has taken 9 years. It's called The Elephant and the Writer, Living an Exceptional Life. But the interesting thing that's happened these past 2 years is that brain science, I mean, when we go back to the early positive thinkers, all the people that you're aware of and I'm aware of, all that was taken in the Bible. All that was taken because it worked. But now, these past 2 to 5 years, but really the past 2 years, in fact, there are 2 bestsellers on the New York Times bestseller list now, brain science shows all this works. It shows that people who have the solid social connections are happier and live longer. It shows that a positive thought changes something in the brain. I mean, all these things that we took as face value, now you can read these books on brain science and you see there's one called The Power of Habit. And it's a wonderful book because it shows how we can break our habit. And it's not by wishful thinking only. There's a strategy. What I do is I teach people how to manage their mind.
Okay, so James, So you are a mind manager. So, you know, that would frighten some people away from me, of course.
Now, let me ask you, why do you think it would frighten someone?
Because you have total control over. Didn't I see that you were a hypnotist too? Wait a minute. Did I not see that somewhere in your bio that you hypnotize people too?
I have been a clinical hypnotist for 40 years, and the only thing that I ever used it for, with great intention, was I worked. And my specialty is regression therapy, so that's taking people back in their memory. So I worked in three areas. I worked with the New York Police Department to help witnesses or victims remember information.
Okay.
Two, I worked with child abuse victims for reframing and letting go. And three, I use it for forgiveness issues. So people have to, you have to understand, I mean, not you don't have to understand because you probably know this, but hypnosis, the word, is a really erroneous and stupid word. It was even the fellow that coined the word in 1841, Dr. James Braid, found out 2 weeks after he came up with the idea of it. He was a dentist who waved something in front of people's eyes and he could extract a tooth without pain. And he said, "Oops, I made a mistake with this word." It's a heightened state of awareness. It's kind of like I look at hypnosis as visualization to the power of 10.
Absolutely.
Or an affirmation to the power of 10. It just
absolutely.
That's all it is. It's a
absolutely.
Part that goes to the subconscious. We've all been hypnotized. That's when you
absolutely.
Mentioned earlier those voices. You know, all the stuff, the negative stuff that churns up are mostly other people's voices from our childhood. People that either put us down, or bullies, or parents that perhaps weren't as loving as we wanted, or had their own issues. And someone said something or rejected at the wrong time. And in those first 6 years of life, those old voices are still churning around at 40, 50, 60 years old. And our job is to recognize them and learn how to deal with them.
Absolutely. So back to what I was saying, that if you are a person that that – What was the term you said with the thoughts? I said
managing their thinking.
It would be like, oh, if you're going to be the manager of my thinking, then you, an outside source like you, would have more control over what I say, do, and think. But then you just also said that people will also replay those old tapes of an abusive situation that occurred in their lives and replay it, and for whatever reason they find whatever they find from it. They find that it reinforces whatever they believe about themselves if it's negative.
Right.
So
just correct one thing. I don't manage anybody's thinking. What I do is give people tools to manage their own thinking. I got enough trouble managing my own thinking.
Oh, no, you don't.
You know, I mean, people, you know, somebody grabbed my wife at a book signing I was doing and pulled her aside and said, or I guess it was a talk I was doing, and I remember it was in Jamaica and it was for a head of banks. And he says, "Does he live what he talks?" And she says, "Oh, boy, does he ever. Living with him is like living with my head in a Cuisinart."
Oh, my God.
I mean, I don't stop this stuff when I get off the phone. I think about this all the time. I write about it all the time.
And this is the way that you walk your talk.
You have to.
You
walk your talk. Now, let me give your listeners an idea, something I teach my private clients. It's, you know, it, I don't know if you were ever a Star Trek fan at all, but some people liked it.
And yes and no.
Yes and no, but you're aware of what it was.
Yes, right. I am.
I was a great Star Trek fan, and I was in two of the movies, which were great fun as an actor.
Can I get your autograph?
Yeah, well, there you go. I go to these conventions, and I autograph my Star Trek photos. But one of the things that there was a Vulcan mind meld, and Spock would meld minds with somebody. He could read their mind, and then he would help interpret their thoughts and so forth. So I started to think about that. And what I came up with was a very interesting, and I will tell you this by a metaphor. I was hired by a golfer and he flew me to Palm Desert, and the deal was he would pay my fee, would fly me to Palm Desert, put me up in a hotel, and I would walk the course with him, and I would help him improve his game. I've worked a lot with athletics. So, I started to think, what can I do outside of visualization? Because visualization is so strong. So I went to Radio Shack, I bought a tape recorder and a little microphone, flew to Palm Springs, and then I said, look, where I want you to put this tape recorder on, put the mic on, and your assignment, and you've got to do this, or I'm not going to play here, is you have to say, when you're golfing, you have to say everything out loud that you would normally say to yourself. Your self-talk.
Ooh.
So you now I can't repeat the things he said, but you know I can go, you know, but he would go, you know, he'd take a shot and he'd go, you stupid dirty, blah, 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 you did it again, you're so, what are you doing, you know, and all this stuff is being recorded. So at the end we went to the clubhouse and I said, here's your next assignment, you have to listen to this.
Yeah,
so I turn it on, and there's cursing, and there's cussing, and berating, and this and that, and he had me turn it off after 2 minutes. He said, I can't listen to this. And I said, okay, now let me ask you a question. Do you have children? And he says, yes. I said, if you spoke to your children as you were talking to yourself, what would happen to their self-esteem, their self-confidence, and their performance?
Oh, yes.
Right? So
yes.
He said, oh, I got it. So I said, I'm going to teach you how to manage that negative thinking. Because the truth is, Dr. Ann, it's very difficult for people to stop thinking negatively. Because here's what happened. I have a negative thought, and I go, oh, that's stupid. I shouldn't be thinking that way. Well, that's the worst thing you can do, because now you've just reinforced the thought.
Mm-hmm.
But what I do is I teach people to what's called reframe their thinking. Is how do you take something that's negative, disappear it, and bring something in that's positive. It's a mechanical thing. So what I do is I teach people to say three words. It's a month process. I mean, this doesn't happen overnight. They have to write it down in the morning. But what I do is I literally teach them how to become aware of their negative thoughts. And when they become aware, they stop and they say three words. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? So somebody goes, "Oh, you didn't meet your goal today, and oh, what you failed." And I teach them to stop and go, "Wow, isn't that interesting? Look at what I just said." Because that's non-judgmental, right? So then there is a moment in time that right then, when you are become aware, it's called your consciousness growing, your awareness growing. When you become aware and you catch yourself and you say, "Isn't that interesting?" You have a moment in time to change your thought, because that thought that just came up more than likely, and I hope people can get this, might have been your parents' voice. It might have been a teacher's voice. It was your voice, but our early programming, our early beliefs kind of echo later in life. So then once you start to learn that, it's a skill that becomes part of your being, and you start to change your thoughts. You don't have to do it as much.
Absolutely. I know that I do probably not the same technique that you just described, but when something that may show up in my life that, you know, doesn't look good, I do stop and say, well, now, isn't that interesting? That's interesting. Or that person is very interesting. And I understand exactly what you're saying. It stops you from going forward into that negativity, or, you know, feeding the negativity.
Yes. And it turns judgment into curiosity. See, if people can learn to write, if they're listening and they can just write this down, just this little phrase, and then think about it. Turn judgment into curiosity. When you judge others, You don't learn. You put them in a category, whether it's their what they do in life, whether it's their race, whether it's their religion, and you stop growing. And when you become curious, I've been very fortunate. I come from a very poor family in the Midwest, and I was very fortunate to earn my way through college and traveled the world, and I created a profession. I've been around the world many times, and I always go in and I'm a little nervous. You know, you go to a foreign country, you go to in the middle where you barely speak the language, but it's always paid off for me to ask questions and learn, because that's the thing that takes fear. and mutes it is yes. knowledge and learning.
Yes, yes. And so many people think that they get to a certain grade level in school, whether it is high school or whether they are finished with their bachelor's or master's or even with their doctorates, they think that that's where learning stops.
Oh, hard.
No, no, no. Learning does not stop because you get a piece of paper saying, oh, today you graduated, today you have earned a particular degree. Learning is an everyday, 24-hour a day, I want to say career, if you want to say that, because you're learning something new every day. Every time I'm on the radio with my guests, and especially guests like you, I'm learning something new, and I appreciate that. And so learning, yes, will help to get rid of those things that we call fears.
Absolutely. I, in Quantum Leap Thinking, An Owner's Guide to the Mind, I have a foundation,
yes.
and there's 14 principles built on that. The foundation is managing change, creative thinking, and continuous learning. Those three things are first and foremost before we can go on to other things. And continuous learning is so very, very important because it's a loop
yes.
that keeps on giving.
Absolutely.
You know, and then you don't learn unless you take risk. You don't learn unless you stretch out of your comfort zone. And that, for some people, is just, listen, I've got a friend who will never hear this interview. He's been my friend since 1973.
You never know who
no,
is.
No, he won't be. I guarantee you. I hired him out of college to run my first theater. And the man, he's a loving, wonderful human being, but he's afraid to step out in the world, and he isn't going. By the way, you may know this. I can't help my friends, right? It's the most difficult thing in the world is to help your family and friends because they look at you as they look at you,
yeah.
and you can be the model for them. But it's very difficult. In other words, he isn't going to come for a coaching session with me.
I know.
But he's so full of fear. And I try to take him out for lunch every week. And without lecturing him, I try to give him examples of just things that he could do. But for him, and fear is, to me, it is one of the chapters in Quantum Leap Thinking. It is a fascinating subject. Fear is fascinating because basically, there are three kinds of fear. There's delicious fear, which is the fear I feel before I scuba dive or fall, go in front of an audience or whatever, perform. And then there's survival fear, which is how we're built. And that's how our brain, the older part of our brain, is primitive, and it's about fight or flight, and it kept us here as a human race. And then the third part is the one that messes us up. I call it illusory fear. And it's when we interpret outside events as a threat to our survival.
Mm-hmm.
Rejection, change, success, failure, and commitment, and poverty are the six major ones. And what I mean by that, I'll give you a quick example. Everyone is afraid of rejection. I mean, I can ask for a show of hands, and if I prompt people, everybody's hand's going to go up. But there's nothing wrong with that.
Yes, definitely.
But if a person is manipulated by the fear of rejection, and I'm going to ask you to play with me for a second. Suppose that I am so overwhelmingly afraid of rejection that I created somehow in my life. And the fear of rejection ultimately is isolation. It's the fear of being alone. So how could I or you or anybody create that without knowing that they're doing it?
Well, if I'm afraid of rejection, is that how do I create this, you're asking me?
How do you create being isolated without even knowing you're isolated because somehow that fear makes you do or say things that end up being a self-fulfilling prophecy?
Well, I won't go out the house.
Right, exactly. So you isolate yourself to protect yourself, or you reject somebody before he or she can reject you, or you don't network, or you don't be social, or you don't get involved to protect yourself. And the ultimate joke, that's why I call fear the great trickster. The ultimate joke is the fear has just manipulated you to create your worst nightmare.
Mm.
Or The other flip side of the coin is you become aggressive, dominating, controlling, or jealous, and you push people away. And then you go, oh, poor me, you play the victim. Look, at nobody wants to be with me, but you can't, the eye cannot behold itself. So you can't see your own actions. And with all those fears, rejection, change, success, failure, commitment, poverty, I think if a person wants to introspect, they have to stop and go, what don't I have in my life right now that I want? And what might I believe to be making that true? And you, by the way, people can actually kind of play with this and discover it. And then the next question is, what would be the 180-degree belief? In other words, the opposite belief that I could believe that might allow me to manifest what I want in my life. And then, of course, then they have to deal with the fear of risk and change and all that.
Well, you know what, James? You said that this is a chapter in which book of yours now?
Quantum Leap Thinking, An Owner's Guide to the Mind. And that people can go to my website, and I've got tons of archived articles. I have a syndicated column in about 7 newspapers, so every month I have a mailing list. I send it out free to people, and they can go to the archives. I mean, there's a lot of stuff they can look at that's really good stuff just for free on my website.
Okay, and what is your website, as you
mentioned? www.jamesmapes, JamesMapes.com, jamesmapes.com.
Okay.
They can follow me on Twitter or Facebook or anything you want.
Oh, you're on that social media stuff?
I'm not a young guy, and I'm telling you, it has helped me beyond your wildest expectations. And everybody says, don't do it, but I've learned this. Number one, Facebook, if you go to my Facebook page, you will see either articles that I think you should read or, like, I took my 47 Chevy to my first car show with my grandson and my wife on Sunday, so I posted a picture of that. So I don't do, unless it's a family kind of loving thing, I don't do a lot of that. I use Facebook to help people, not to be the garbage that I usually see on there. And then LinkedIn is for those of your listeners who are in the business field, I say join now, because your network on LinkedIn you'll attract, believe me, what you need to. I belong to groups on speaking, I belong to groups on psychology, I belong to groups on acting, and then Twitter, of course. It's just a network. It helps you go back to learning. You're going to learn stuff.
You know what? Everything that you just said kind of correlates to an article. You said the paradox of paradigms. So it kind of goes along, flows with that. So can you explain to us what the paradox of paradigms?
Because yes, I can. I love this, because a paradigm, I have to define a paradigm. Paradigms is not paradigms. A paradigm is a belief. It is the rules that we operate by in life, personally or as a society. Paradigms are the boundaries. If you look at it like a chess game or it's the rules that we live by. Now, the interesting part of it is there are only three ways to understand these rules. There are three kinds of paradigms. And one is, the first one is the paradigms or the rules that are put on us and imposed on us by society that we don't agree with. For example, in Connecticut, where I live, it's against the law to talk on a cell phone. Well, I almost got clobbered 3 times today already out at coming from the gym by someone talking on a cell phone. So that would be easy for them to identify, because they don't agree with the rules. So that's one paradigm. The second paradigms are the paradigms we impose on ourselves that we don't follow. For example, let's suppose I need to lose weight, so I commit to a diet, but then I sneak a snack, and then I don't stick to my diet. So now I can recognize that paradigm, because I've just broken my own rule.
Yes.
The third kind, and the most difficult, are the ones that actually run our lives, because they're invisible. And it would be like, I don't even know how to begin to talk about it, except one of the exercises I do with a corporation, and I surprise them with it, and I break people into teams of 5, and I say, here's what I want your teams to do. I want you to come up with 20 points that would create a strategy for your corporation to fail in 1 year.
Oh, my.
Exactly. And they go, what? Well, nobody ever talks about failure. Oh. You know, but then they do it, and they start to discover beliefs they have that are limiting. For example, gee, we don't do it that way. It's not the way it's been done here. Another one, it's not my job, you know.
Right, absolutely.
Because what I've discovered is we don't, you know, it's very difficult for people to be accountable for their choices. And that's why when we talk about being a victim, people sometimes say, well, what do you mean by that? There are victims. I said, yeah, there are terrible victims of earthquakes and war. But when you choose to be a victim, when you choose to say, I'm powerless. I don't have an imagination. I can't do that. I'm too old. That's all a choice to be a victim. And we want to get rid of that.
Right.
Because the brain grows. I mean, that's another thing that brain science has shown. The brain grows and molds and is flexible until we are no more. So everyone can reinvent themselves. And when you start to look at the beliefs you have, the paradigms you have, and that's called that's why I said the paradox of paradigms, is that paradigms are necessary to understand, but they take a little work to discover what you're, and without judgment. You know, as you start to judge something, say that you're, I don't know, you're prejudiced or you're opinionated or you're unbendable because this is the way your family always did it, and you start to discover these in your heart. Don't say, oh, isn't that interesting?
Absolutely. Because why I related that title to what we were talking about, social media, because there are groups of people who are definitely afraid of being out there on Facebook because, oh, I've heard so many terrible things about people being followed and this and that and the other, and if I put my information out there, I don't want everybody to know where I live. I don't want, you know, they come up with all of these excuses of why they cannot use this, okay? Or if they're a Twitter, why do I need to tweet, huh? Why? Oh, that's time-consuming. But you have taken it a step beyond the fear-based people who are looking for nothing but fear. And if they can find fear in social media, don't you know that they can find fear in everything else that they are involved in?
Well, I'll tell you, there's two pieces of advice I would have. Three, one is make friends with failure. Make friends with reality. That's the way things really are, because most people deny or blame other people. And by the way, we create our reality. I believe it absolutely. And three is serve other people. Help other people. I use the social networking to give people things that will help their life, even on when I tweet. And what I'll do is I'll find a video that's life-enhancing or an article that's life-enhancing, and I put it out, I tweet it. And then people pick it up, they share it, people come, you know, what I've done again with that, I've attracted people who are in marketing and sales and psychology, and people follow me that want to learn. I'm not going to tell people I went to the gym today. I mean, so what? First of all, I only devote 1 hour a day to social media. That's it. I limit it. So people follow me. I follow them back. I put stuff out. I don't do Facebook as very much, but I do LinkedIn. LinkedIn's just great for business.
Yes.
So if you want to be a player in today's world, listen. Today's world is challenging. We don't even have to talk about, you know, all the people that are out of jobs and want jobs. But this is where attitude comes up. I will tell you another quick story. 2.5 years ago, I got back from shooting a film in Scotland. It was a thriller horror film, and it was wonderful. And the man who directed it and wrote it saw my one-man show 20 years ago, and he remembered me. I was the only American in the film. I got back. Mm-hmm. I got depressed. And I was depressed for 3 days, and it was so unlike me. I don't get depressed. I get anxious. I sometimes get angry. I don't get depressed. So I went to my doctor and immediately went to my cardiologist, and that night I got a call on the phone, and the cardiologist, and this is what he said, I know you're a hardhead. I know that you don't listen well, so I'm going to tell you something. You've got less than 2 weeks to live. You have an aortic aneurysm.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was a while. So I had to search out my wife. I had to break the news to her. But I decided that I was going in. I mean, listen, they had to take my heart out of the body. Now I'm back lifting more weights than I ever have. But it was a pretty tough thing. But I went in with the attitude I was going to come out with a new program to help people. And I came out with a program, which we put up at Bridgeport Hospital in Connecticut. It's going to go at Yale, and it's called Patient Pre-Op Post-Op Healing Therapy. And what it is, it's a mental process to help people take away all fear and stress before surgery. It gives them hope. It implants hope for the future, gets them off narcotics sooner, and gets them out of the hospital sooner. Now, the point of the story is I took something that was I could have been a victim about. Oh, poor me. Why is this happening? I'm going to die. I was scared to death. And I turned it into a learning experience. Even when I was in ICU and I could not talk, my throat was so damaged from the thing that was down. Mm-hmm. I was giving my wife sign language. She's a journalist, and she was helping me ask questions to the nurses. And what I discovered, one of the 5 points I call living an exceptional life, is attitude. And what I asked the nurses, and this is kind of a metaphor for life, I said, does attitude, do you think, help healing? And they said, you know, no one's ever asked us that. And I got five nurses to talk about this. People who should have never had problems that were the, you know, blaming and fighting with their family and they weren't grateful for their nurses, I mean, had more problems. And people that should have had death problems or were terrible problems healed faster because they treated people nicely, they were grateful, they thanked people for helping. In other words, their attitude was a positive. Now, if someone doesn't have work in the world and they're angry and they're resentful and they go for a job interview, or if someone doesn't have work from the world and they're grateful and they write down 5 things every night that they're grateful for and they get up and focus on that and they do good for people and they go in for the job interview, who's someone going to choose?
Absolutely. Yeah, that
person. Attitude is a practical thing to work on.
Yes, it is.
And being grateful is a practical thing to work on.
They're practical, and I see it, you see it, but there are so many people who are so down in the doldrums that they're so blinded that they can't see this, or nor can they feel any gratitude or, you know, appreciation for anything. And those are the people that, you know, really may need to see you.
Are they listening to your show, do you think?
I hope so.
Well,
maybe
they're listening
not.
To your show,
and
the
maybe
practical,
not.
Then, well, if they are, or if someone knows somebody, this exercise I give to every one of my clients, and I'm not, you know, I'm a pretty tough personal coach. I deal with mostly CEOs and sports figures and stuff. But if someone just does this simple exercise, before they go to bed, they write down 5 things for which they're grateful, period. That's all. They could repeat the same things every night. Doesn't matter. What a way to go to bed. And then you get up in the morning, and before you brush your teeth, you look at those 5 things, and you circle one. Where does it put your focus to start a day? The whole thing takes 30 seconds, and it changes your brain. It actually does change your brain.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's a great exercise for people to do.
So, James, if people want to get in touch with you about being their transformational coach, how do they get in touch with you about that?
Well, they can go to my website, or they can call 203-762-1200. I take a limited amount of coaching clients, but the number's on my website, too. And I do maybe 3 a week over the phone, and I do 2 in person because I spend a lot of time now writing and traveling, speaking. So they go to the website. And it's, you know, this is very practical stuff. And I have to say up front, no one gets away without 4 or 5 assignments, which they have to do before I work with them again. I mean, I'm an active person. You cannot read a book or read your book or read my book or listen to your show and not do something. People think that they can just do this by osmosis. You know, it takes some work, but the work is greater. I mean, the payoff is greater than the sacrifice.
Absolutely. And James, we have a few more minutes, but I do want you to tell us about your newest book that you mentioned earlier, The Elephant and the Writer, Living an Exceptional Life. Is it out yet?
No, it's not out, but I will tell you the premise of it. The elephant is the subconscious, and the writer is the conscious. And I came up with that metaphor after researching the brain, because all brain scientists, all neuropsychologists know this, and I've always known it, is the subconscious, the part of us that does not think, controls us 90% of our choices. And that's a lot. So that means that we have to learn how to take the writer, because we are like a writer. Our consciousness, our conscious mind, on top of this 6,000-pound elephant, this beast that loves the status quo, it does what it wants to do, it doesn't like to do long-term sacrifice, it wants the short-term payoff, but it is the center of our emotions, and it's the part of us that can't tell the difference between a real experience or an imagined experience. And the beauty of the writer, our conscious mind, is that it is the visionary. It's the one that can listen to this show and make the choice to visualize a future. It is the visionary. The subconscious can't visualize. It doesn't even think. So we got this wonderful brain, our newest part of our brain, that can do this work, learn these tools. So that's what the book is about. It's about perceptions. It's about self-invention. And the last three chapters are about forgiveness and letting go.
So the other F word, forgiveness, and that is another something that we talked about, one F word, fear, earlier, and then forgiveness. What do you have to say about forgiveness?
What I have to say about it is that it is something I've done for over three decades with people. I trick them into it. Because
you trick them? Oh, my God.
I trick them into it, because people used to talking about forgiveness for people, and they start to short circuit. So what I get them to do is discover things that, for example, they're mad at themselves from the past. Or they're mad at their mother who's been dead for 25 years. Or they're mad at somebody who punched them in the mouth or betrayed them or took their job or this or that. All that stuff is like a toxin. It's like a poison.
Yes.
And people really don't – and this is, by the way, I got tons of research on my desk here. People don't understand that carrying this stuff around, your grievances around, stop you from loving – it's carrying old garbage from the past and projecting in the future and letting go. It's like saying, somebody says to me, I don't want to forgive. And I say, in other words, what you want to do is take the poison pill of not forgiving and expect somebody else to die. Right?
Yes.
I'm going to just say this out loud. Fear makes us stupid. You know? It does. It just makes us stupid. And so forgiveness is the one way in life that it's a selfish act, you see. I always say, be selfish, forgive, because what it does, and unleash the burden from you. It does. Carrying all this stuff around doesn't hurt anybody else. I actually had somebody who I've known for years who said, I'll never forgive my brother. He ruined the family. He did this and he did that. And he got all red in the face. And I said, I said to him, I'm not going to say his name, but I said, well, now, wait a minute. Let me get this straight. By not forgive, I'll never let him off the hook. I said, and you think that's hurting him?
Absolutely. It's not hurting
you.
Hurting
you. You know, it's hurting you. So,
yes.
I got 14 points to forgiveness I talk to people about, and some of them are, you don't need to forget. You know, you forgive, you don't have to forget. Forgiveness doesn't condone bad behavior. It just allows you to make space in your mental hard drive.
Absolutely.
What people have to get straight about what forgiveness is and what forgiveness isn't.
Absolutely. You know, I have really enjoyed our conversation today.
Well,
and I'm quite sure that our listening audience has enjoyed this conversation as well. One last question I wanted to ask you, James, is with everything that you do, being an actor, being a writer, being a coach, how does all of this kind of reflect to how does this work with the joy of wealthy living? How does that relate to that?
Well, first of all, let's look at where joy comes from. I think all of us have our true center, our godlike self, our passion. Passion is a great word. I truly have developed a life and helped people to develop a life that goes on passion. And that passion is the drive to do something. It's congruent with our values. It's congruent with our life priorities. And that, to me, is joyful living. At night, my wife and I stop. We have a little glass of wine. And every night, we look at each other and say, we're giving thanks right now for our beautiful relationship. And it may sound corny, but I'm telling you, we give thanks, and it is good. When I have, when I'm on a plane, and traveling is no fun, going to the airport is no fun, I tap into the joy of what I do and look at, I'm about to go make a difference with people. And it's a selfish act, because I'm not so sure there isn't anything but a selfish act, but boy, joyful living to me is everything.
Well, thank you, James. And everybody, don't forget to go to his website, JamesMapes.com, for more information and his books. Thank you so much for being on the Joy Wealthy Living, and I hope to have you back one day.
Dr. N, thank you. It's been a joy. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Bye, and see you next week.
Thank you for tuning into the Joy of Wealthy Living radio program with Dr. Ann Williamson. If you'd like to contact Dr. Ann, go to her website, www.myjoyenterprise.com, or email her at drann@myjoyenterprise.com. We'll see you back here next week.